Family Fellowship, great to have you with us today. Happy Memorial Day weekend. How many of you are ready for summer break?
Yeah.
Everybody I found except the moms of little kids are like, no, take it back for a while. I don't want that. Yeah. Let's face it, we live in a busy world, right? Family life is busy. As you just saw, my son is graduating from high school this year, so we've been going to the last concerts and the awards banquets and all these graduation parties, and it's just a busy season. And we're not even involved in youth sports anymore. Some of you aren't even here because you're in baseball tournaments in New York and all around the country. I mean, you know what we do with our kids and their schedules. It's exhausting. And then single parents, I don't know how they do it. They're my heroes, but it's a hectic time of year. And I start off by talking this morning about how busy families are, because traditionally, you know, that has been the place where you actually seek shelter from the busy world, right? You remember the Andy Griffith Show? They used to sit around on the porch on the weekends and play the guitar, and everybody just sit around and talk. That is science fiction, right, compared to today. Family adds to the busyness that is already grinding us down at the workplace. Now, I know we're a diverse congregation, and so that means we all have some different relationships to work, just as we have different relationships to family. There are people here, for example, who are out of work and would love to have more work. But what I find from most of the folks I talk to is that a bigger problem in a place here like Austin is not getting enough work, but actually getting enough rest. People are just worn out. In fact, the number one reason that I hear from people who have been sporadic in church attendance is, man, I've just been so busy at work. With our family has been so busy is a close number two. So I want to address this morning a situation that I have been seeing for quite some time, and I just don't think it's healthy for us. And at the same time, the Bible has some pretty clear instructions on how to deal with it. So we're going to talk today about finding rest, what I have cleverly titled the rest of the story. Because when you combine dad jokes with pastor jokes, you get a nuclear option of cheesiness. But the reality is, even when we do have downtime, we've forgotten how to rest, and it's killing us. And that's not hyperbole. The ability to deeply rest really is a life or death thing. No one can do without it, but it's just not natural, at least not natural to our current society. It's not simple. It's absolutely difficult, and it takes an enormous amount of discipline and practice. In fact, probably more than any other time in the history of the world. Why would that be? Why would it be so hard? Why do we have this modern situation? And let's look at that briefly, because the modern situation means that the eternal human need for rest has been enormously aggravated. Let me just give you quick four brief trends here. But A, more and more, at least in Western culture, jobs are insecure. Jobs, whole departments, if they don't perform, if they don't turn a profit, they're eliminated. We're seeing entire industries just seemingly go away in the blink of an eye. I don't think there's ever been a culture, ever been a place where job security was so bad outside of just a total economic collapse. My brother-in-law, I was just with him at a funeral a couple weeks ago, and he was telling me, I won't tell you where he works because I don't want to get anybody in trouble, but he has a pretty big engineering job. And he said he has figured out a way using drones and AI technology that he can map out and do all these things in about a day that used to take them about 6 months to do in their deal. And he can knock it out in a day. And he was presenting this to his boss, and he said he just turned ashen white. And he says, you realize this will cost 500 people their jobs, right? Now, at the same time, it would be the efficient thing to do. Right? Efficient for whom? So there's that stress. B, the work-life paradox. And I'm saying big things in a nutshell here, but in the decade from 2010 to 2020, there were all sorts of research done on the fact that the economies have been changing, where it used to be that the people at the top of a company, made 10 to 20 times more than the people at the bottom. Now that number is more like 100 or 200 times. And so people who make these large amounts of money are expected to put in an enormous amount of hours. Not measuring necessarily efficiency, just sheer numbers of hours logged. And then the pandemic kicked in. And it just stirred that pot, and we still don't know which way is up. And the great resignation is real. A lot of people just said, you know what, no thanks. Part of that money, I made some stock option stuff, and I'm just going to live off of that for a while. And so we're in this place where there's many companies that can't get enough employees, enough workers, which means that there's actually other people left doing more of the work in some cases. So some people have opted out, and some people have taken a double or triple portion. Actually, I just read that we have been this last year in legislatures all over the states. We have been rolling back child labor laws in record numbers. That's not good. That's not, oh, here's our solution. Let's put children to work. But this is some of the dynamics we've got. But it's just never been harder to navigate this already sort of mythical work-life balance. And by the way, that's in large part to part C here, technology. Ah, technology, you double-edged sword, you. Nowadays, right, you can work anywhere, which also means that we work everywhere. And it's harder and harder to keep work from spilling out into every nook and cranny of life. Here's a question I keep seeing answered. Are we working from home or are we living at work? We still don't know the answer to this. It's harder and harder to tell. I think we haven't even begun to explore the psychological tensions of this new mobile lifestyle. It has given, yes. But we've also allowed a Trojan horse to literally come into our homes with this, and we don't know how that's going to shake out. Technology has changed everything. We were in West Texas, again, for the funeral a couple weeks ago, and we rented an Airbnb in a little old house there. And I asked the kids if they knew what this was. It was there in the hallway. We got the picture. Hello? There it is, that picture right there. Now, they did not know what that was. Ari guessed it was a little alcove for a statue of the Virgin Mary. Good guess. No, it was something else, and I knew what it was, not because I personally experienced it, but my grandparents' house had, and of course that's where the only phone in the house was nailed in place, right? And so when you got a call, you had to go there and take it in the little box underneath. Kids, that was where a phone book went. A phone book, if you said, Siri, where's the... Siri's just a lady that would hand you a book, and you could look it up and see what their phone numbers were in that. And so, if you were a teenager, you wanted to get frisky with your crush on the phone, you had to do it in the living room in front of your mom, right? Well, now we're free. We've cut that line, and so now we carry around the phone in our pockets. In fact, forget carrying around a phone. We carry around a supercomputer with more processing power, hundreds of times more processing power than the computers that we use to put a man on the moon. And we have this in our pocket. Anybody remember the days of, I got to bring home some files from work? Please. Are you crazy? They're all in the cloud, right? What do you want? I can get to for 15 seconds, right? Which is exactly what some of our bosses want us to do any day of the week. And so we've become, in many ways, enslaved to these devices. I've counseled a couple in the church. They no longer attend the church, so I may be okay with this illustration. If you think you know who they are, you don't. But anyway, they were struggling in their marriage, and one of the complaints was that the wife was unable to keep herself from responding to texts during the act of marital intimacy, all right? And I know that sounds like a Cosmo article, but real true stories of pastors. This is where we are. And so our time-saving devices are actually costing us so much time and really so many other things. So that's C. And then D, there is an enormous psychological and social pressure on work to be fulfilling. This is a little bit more complex concept, but cultural analysis have said that, and this is pretty much universal agreement on this, that whereas in traditional societies, you get your meaning in life through your family and through basically fulfilling a fairly prescribed social role, either as a mother or a father or a brother or a sister or a husband or a wife or a son or a daughter. That's where your identity comes from. In a traditional society, who are you? Oh, well, I'm a father. I'm a mother. No, work in that environment wasn't as important. See, you just needed to find a way to make a living because that allowed you to support your family. And family was everything. So the job just kind of provided for the family structure. But we're actually the first culture in the history of the world that says, no, you now define yourself by deciding what you want to be and attaining it. So, you know, when we say, what are you? Well, I'm a lawyer, I'm a teacher, I'm an accountant. And so we are defining ourselves by this, and then that's how you find your significance. So we're chasing something even bigger than a paycheck and really more elusive. See, the dark side of you can be anything you want to be is whatever you are now, you could be more. You could be more. And so that chase is exhausting, not just to the body, but actually to the soul. Now, each of those four things is troublesome on its own. But when you put A, B, C, and D together, it means that our modern society has created the perfect storm when it comes to finding rest. We need it more than ever, but we're less capable of finding it. And again, our busyness is costing us something precious. In his novel, The Second Coming, Walker Percy poses the question, is it possible for people to miss their lives in the same way one misses an airplane? And the answer for too many people in our world is yes. And Percy describes such a life. Not once in his entire life had he allowed himself to come to rest in the quiet center of himself, but had forever cast himself forward from some dark past he could not remember to a future which did not exist. Not once had he been present for his life, so his life had passed like a dream. Look, I don't want that to be my life. And I know you don't want that either. Now, I'm a history major, which means that I tend to think that we can find most answers to our present problems in the solutions of the past, and I believe that's the case here as well. You see, as much as the modern world may have exacerbated the problem, it didn't create it. This is an ancient problem as well. This is an issue of human nature, which is why the Bible addresses it. Because the scriptures seem to anticipate that human beings will always push past things to their limits. We always want to go past the boundaries to our limits. I think, theologically, this is because we're actually created in the image of God. And God is omnipotent, no limits. He's all-powerful. He can do it all. And therefore, some instinct way back in our cosmic mind, we think we can do it all. But we forget that unlike God, we are fallen creatures. And so in our fallenness, it means that the image of God in us is marred. And so we wind up pushing past our limits in unhealthy ways. And so God says to us over and over again, listen, I know what you're capable of. I know what I created you to be, but I didn't create you to live like that all the time. I didn't create you to live at your limits, just like I didn't create an automobile to be in the RPMs always in the red all the time. That's going to burn up your engine. And you're going to burn out your life. And so God says in his wisdom, he has mandated in the scriptures some limits in the form of commands. Okay. See, God's rules aren't to ruin our good time. They are for our long-term good. I think the parents among us can understand that, right? We can see something that our kids sometimes can't see that, hey, you're looking at the now, but this is looking at the long time. And so predominantly, I think that these commands revolve around three areas the most where human beings tend to push to their limits the most. Three areas where if left to our own devices, we would steer right past the safety barriers and wreck our lives on the rocks of reality. And so one of those areas is money. God knows that left to our own human nature, our own devices, we would spend everything today on ourselves with no regard for tomorrow or for anybody else. And so the main correction offered there is God's command of the tithe. God says, I don't, from the start, don't live on 100% of your earnings. Trust me with 10% off the top, and I'll help you to live on the 90% better than you ever could on the 100%, because in the end, it's always a matter of trust. But we're not talking about money today. You can breathe. All right, it's just an illustration. We're going on. All right. Second danger zone is morality. Okay. Something about, like a wet paint sign on a bench, there's something about us that just wants to touch what we're not supposed to touch. Right? We just have this in us to reach out and touch the forbidden. And so God gives us behavioral commandments. Yeah, hey, don't commit adultery, because the fruits of that will spoil your families, your society, your bank accounts, and your soul. But I'm going to tell you to actively avoid even lust. See, don't let yourself get to the place where if you give in to one temptation, you're so close to the edge there's no turning back from the ultimate consequences. Build some moral margin into your life. Live by not just what you can get away with, but live with wisdom. Live with some restraint. But we'll not talk about that again today either. So God builds margin into our money through the tithe. God builds margin into our morality through ethical commandments. And thirdly, God wants to build margin into our time through the commandment of Sabbath rest. And that is what we're going to spend some time talking about today. It's actually rule number 4 on God's top 10 list. Okay, Exodus 20 verse 8 says, remember the Sabbath day by keeping it holy. It made it into the Ten Commandments. By the way, and it's kind of a moot point now because the bill failed to pass the legislature this week, but some of you have asked me about what I think about forcing schools to post the Ten Commandments in classrooms. My standard response, as it was the last time they tried to do this, we keep trying to do this every few decades, is I think that's actually a bad idea for a number of reasons, but maybe we should try putting up in the churches first. Let's see how that goes. So anyway, truth is the Sabbath is a command, and it's one that is repeated actually all throughout the Abrahamic religions of the world. So, of course, Jews have this. Muslims have this. Islamic code includes a command for Sabbath. But lest you think that Sabbath is just some kind of an Old Testament thing or Jewish thing, the New Testament sets us straight that this is still in effect for Christians. Hebrews 4:9 says, there remains then a Sabbath rest for the people of God. So this morning, I want to talk to us about the what, the why, and the how of keeping the commandment to remember the Sabbath day and keep it holy. So first of all, quickly, what even is a Sabbath? What is a Sabbath? It comes from the Hebrew word Shabbat, which first appears in Genesis 2:2. By the seventh day, God had finished the work he had been doing. So on the seventh day, he rested from all his work. And the word translated there, he rested, is Shabbat. Okay. Now, Shabbat, Sabbath rest, comes in three forms in the Bible. The sabbatical principle is in three forms. The first of which is the most well-known, and that's a day. Okay. To keep the Sabbath means to rest one day out of seven. Now, which day is really not the point. People get very legalistic about this. Oh, it has to be Sunday, right? The word Shabbat is actually where we get our word Saturday. It's a combination. It's a blend of the Jewish day and the pagan day to worship the Roman god Saturn. But Shabbat means Saturday, and to this day, for observant Jews, Sabbath is Saturday. We were in Israel. We weren't. Kids weren't even born yet. Deanna and I, years ago, were in Israel, and at sunset on Friday to sunset on Saturday, that's the Sabbath, and ain't nothing going on. In fact, we were there for Y2K. We were there for New Year's 2000. How cool is that? We were like, all the computers going to reset, and Jesus is going to come back, and we're going to be in Jerusalem. You know what happens on Friday night in Jerusalem? Nothing. Nothing. There ain't no parties. They said, if you guys will be quiet, you Gentiles can go down to the hotel bar and close the doors, and you can have a little, but keep it quiet. Meanwhile, we're looking out, and the Palestinians got fireworks. We're like, there's a party over there. We're in the wrong place. So they're very serious about Saturday then. But, you know, we are not observant Jews. And pretty quickly in the church, with the growth of Gentile converts, the Sabbath day pretty quickly shifted over to Sunday, partially in recognition of the resurrection of Jesus. But here's the thing. Like all symbolic rituals from the Old Testament, when they come over to the New Testament, they often get changed to demonstrate their true purpose. See, because it all points to Jesus. And so Jesus fulfills the Old Testament. It all points to him, so he's allowed to change it. So, for example, Jesus changes the Passover meal, okay, for Christians, not for Jews, but changes the Passover meal for us into what we now practice as communion or the Lord's Supper. Same thing with kosher laws. Jesus says, you can eat that hot dog, all right, that cheeseburger. Same thing with water baptism. By the way, yes, water baptism is next week. If you have not been baptized in water since you believe, come see me. This is the time to get it done. Animal sacrifices, all kinds of ritualistic practices. So one aspect of keeping the Sabbath is to make one day out of seven a day of rest. Okay, the emphasis, again, not on a specific day of the week, but on the rhythm of one out of seven. One out of seven. It's a rhythmic thing. But there's actually two other sabbatical principles. The second is not a rest of time, but a rest of place. It's a rest for the land. In Leviticus chapter 25, the farmers are commanded to let the land rest, okay, to lie fallow once every 7 years. Conventional environmental principle shows us the wisdom of this. You need to let the nutrients in the soil replenish itself. Every good farmer knows that if you just keep pushing and keep pushing, eventually you will have no yield in your field. You will basically poison your own field. So there's that dynamic. So Sabbath means one day out of seven, 1 year out of seven. And then thirdly, the same chapter, Leviticus, describes the command for a year of Jubilee. Okay, so every 50 years, which is the year, 1 year after seven sets of seven. Seven's a big thing here. Seven sets of seven, 49, add another year, 50. And at the year of Jubilee, all debts were to be canceled. Everybody gets a fresh start. Right? You just like, you go brand new, clean slate. Here's the thing. There is no evidence, by the way, that Israel ever kept this historically, not even once. But it is always talked about is that kind of thing that we can look forward to when God's kingdom on earth finally looks like this, his kingdom in heaven. And so we still long for this sense of equity and justice and mercy. We don't have it yet, but we're built for it. All right, so that's what a Sabbath is, okay? It is a principle about observing a pattern of rest from work, rest from activity, rest from production, okay? So let's talk next about why we should keep the Sabbath. And there are two reasons given in the Bible. I don't know if you know this, but the Ten Commandments appears in two different places, two different books in the Bible. And in each of them, we are given a different explanation for why we should keep the Sabbath. So let's start with Exodus because we've already alluded to that one. But the first explanation for Sabbath is the argument from creation. Okay, let's read the whole thing. I read you the first sentence, but Exodus 20 verse 8 starts, "Remember the Sabbath day by keeping it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. On it you shall not do any work, neither you nor your son or daughter, nor your male or female servant, nor your animals, nor any foreigner residing in your towns." Okay, that's the command. Now here's the reason, verse 11. "For in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth, the sea, and all that is in them, but he rested on the seventh day. Therefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and made it holy." Okay? So we rest one day out of seven because that's what God did. See? It's not that God was tired. God doesn't get tired. But God was showing us that we were created for a pattern. Okay? Work, yes. Work is a good thing. Do it unto the Lord. But then rest. Take a day out of seven to celebrate what you've done before you move on to the next thing. That's how God designed you. sovereignty. And if you violate the design, there will always be problems. I know I've used this illustration a bunch, but your automobile out there, your car, you are welcome to go fill it up with chocolate sauce instead of oil. Because you're the owner of the car, you can do that. But don't be shocked when the thing blows up on you. Because you may own it, but you didn't design it. And it was not designed to run on chocolate sauce instead of oil. Well, the same thing is true for rest. You were designed for rest. One day out of seven. I actually had this principle drilled into me at my first pastoral job. Before I came here, I was an associate pastor in Missouri at a megachurch. I mean, they were running 5,000 on a weekend when I was there. I think it's about 11,000 now. And as associate pastor, we worked very hard. In fact, at first, I had a tough time keeping up. You know how like in sports, you go from high school football to college football, and it's just a faster game. It takes a while to catch up. Well, that was me, and so I was kind of falling behind. And sometimes I would sneak in to the office on my day off, which was a Thursday, and do some catch-up work. And I always kind of assumed that my boss would actually appreciate that. One of these rules, like, "Yo, don't do that." Good boy, right? But one day when he came into the office, he came in to grab something and saw me in there working. Pastor John, some of you were here on our 10th anniversary, Pastor John came and preached here at the church. And in fact, that was 10 years ago. So anyway, he caught me in my office, and he read me the Riot Act. I mean, he said, "Anthony, what you're really doing is saying you're better than God." See, it's a pride thing. It's a lack of trust thing. God gives you the grace to get done in 6 days what needs to be done, but you don't trust him in that. And so you're actually living in willful disobedience to God, and he can't bless that. And you know what? He was right. And I've never forgotten that that lesson. I'm very good at observing my Sabbath to this day. I'm not good at very many disciplines, but I tithe and I keep the Sabbath. And I learned those lessons in difficult ways. I have come to understand how God designed us. And my wife will tell you that that's probably the thing she appreciates most about Pastor John. Because pastors are notorious for overworking and neglecting their family. After all, it's not exactly a 9-to-5 weekday gig, right? So, the first biblical explanation for Sabbath is this argument from creation. The second is the argument from the Exodus. Now, not from the book of Exodus. This is a little confusing, but from the event itself. And so I said that the Ten Commandments are in two places. One is in the book of Exodus. So the argument from creation is in the book of Exodus. The argument from the Exodus is in the book of Deuteronomy. Okay, and there are some similarities, but a different explanatory focus. So let me read this one for you. This is Deuteronomy chapter 5. It says this, 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. On it you shall not do any work, neither you, nor your son or daughter, nor your male or female servant, nor your ox, nor your donkey. By the way, right there in Scripture, it says rest your ass. It's right there. Or any of your animals, nor any foreigner residing in your town, so that you, your male and female servants may rest as you do. Okay, that's the same. Now look at the reason why. Remember that you were slaves in Egypt, and that the Lord your God brought you out of there with a mighty hand and an outstretched arm. Therefore, the Lord your God has commanded you to observe the Sabbath day. God says, the reason you deserve a Sabbath rest is because nobody gave you a day off for 400 years. Slaves don't get days off. See, slaves work when they're told to work. And the reality is, we have many freedoms in America today, and yet many of us live like slaves. A slave is just a commodity. A slave is just a means of production. And God says to his creation again and again, no. No, you are more than just what you do. Your life has meaning, not because you're productive, not because you are an income source. No, your life has meaning because I love you, because I value you. I desire relationship with you. You are more than just what you do. And guys, this is a real problem in modern society. We boil people down to just what they do. We do it to ourselves. This is why unemployment, and especially for guys, is so hard. Because beyond just the financial and provisional dynamics, there's the psychological angst of who even am I if I'm not fill in the blank. See? So Sabbath is a counter-revolution that tells you to find your identity in being a child of God first and foremost. You are not just a teacher. You are not just a programmer. You are not just a buyer. You're not just a pastor. You are not a slave. So before you can begin to practice keeping the Sabbath, you've got to understand what this is all about. Only that knowledge will give you the ability to avoid the dual traps of legalism and neglect that work together to rob you of the divine benefits of Sabbath rest. You have to learn to say to yourself, hey, this is an act of liberation. This is a slave uprising. My work does not define me. Christ defines me. I am not defined by how many customers I get, by how much money I make, by how well I'm doing at this, by how expert I become at that. I am not. So I am taking time off today. I am taking time off tonight. I'm taking time off this week. I'm not even going to think about it. Why? Because I'm not a slave. Listen, in our fallenness, we tend to turn God's commands into a bummer when they're really a gift, if we'll properly understand them. With understanding comes wisdom. Look, when I was a kid, my mom used to force me to have nap time, and I hated it. But today, my Sunday afternoon nap is one of the highlights of my week, right? I got some wisdom. I got some understanding. Yeah, I got old, but I'm less foolish than I was. Okay, so let's be less foolish together. So that's what Sabbath is. That's why Sabbath is. Let's get down to the nitty-gritty. How do we keep the Sabbath? And I'm going to keep this part really short because part of the problem with this is how it tends to get abused through legalism. Every generation turns it into something you're not supposed to do. You see it in Jesus' day, you see it in our own. What is meant to be for our benefit gets turned into just another means of control, especially religious control. The focus shifts from what we can't do rather than what we can. Even Jesus faced this problem. The religious leaders of his day were constantly getting on him about what he would do on the Sabbath. One time on a Sabbath, Jesus healed a man. Isn't that great? It's a miracle. And it says that afterwards, the religious leaders went away and plotted how they might kill him for healing a guy. See, they were so focused on the rules, they had forgotten the principles completely. And so Jesus reminded them, Mark 2:27. Then he said to them, the Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. See, this is a blessing, not a curse. It's not a bunch of rules. So let me just give you one don't, okay, for your Sabbath. Just one. On the day that you choose to set aside as your day of Sabbath rest, and again, the day doesn't matter. Okay, mine is Thursday. Still, we've just kind of kept that pattern. I hope you know that Sunday is not a day of rest for Connor and I. Right? Whoever wrote, easy like a Sunday morning, that was not a pastor. All right? No, your Sabbath should be the one day a week that you avoid anything having to do with that thing the world would say defines who you are. Okay? So, on my Sabbath, on Thursday, I don't do anything pastoral unless there's an emergency, right? The Bible itself talks about having an ox in the ditch, right? Sometimes you just got to do that. If you are being driven to the hospital, by all means, you better call me, okay, if it's a Thursday. But if it's not,
if it can wait till Friday, please let it wait till Friday, because I need to remember that I am more than just a pastor. So I avoid anything vocational on my Sabbath. So what would that look like for you? See? Maybe if you're a teacher, don't grade papers on your Sabbath. If you're in management, don't check your email on the Sabbath. If you're in retail, don't go anywhere near that store on your Sabbath. You say, oh, but my boss won't let me. Well, because you're a slave. Get free. Don't be a slave anymore. Be who God said you are. Listen, Sabbath is different from just a day off. Some of you may get 2 days off a week. That's a luxury. That's wonderful. The Bible has no concept of a two-day work week, a two-day weekend. I often work several hours on Saturdays, but I'm telling you, I guard my Thursdays. And when something comes up, key meeting, you can't control all those things that I can't avoid, I'll switch it. I will sometimes trade off a Wednesday for a Thursday. But the key is to have one day where you can remind yourself that you are more than what you do. Okay? Be intentional or it will never happen. The world, our modern world, will never give you a Sabbath. You have to take it. Carve out one day that is different from all the other days. All right? So that's the only don't. Don't do anything related to your job unless it's a true emergency. And then do whatever it is that makes that a day of delight. Let me give you three things that could define your Sabbath. And again, I'm not going to go into details because I don't want to make it legalistic, but these are just kind of a guidelines, three general principles, and they all start with C. And pastors love it when 3 points start with the same letter, right? So these three words are curiosity, coziness, and care. Okay? Curiosity asks the question, is there more? Now, you can ask, is there more, with two different motivations, greed or wonder. If it's greed, nothing will ever satisfy that, and it will never lead to rest. It'll just lead to grinding ambition. Okay? But if the heart is motivated by wonder, we will wind up with what feels like play more than work. It might require effort. It might even require stringent effort, but the end result will leave you feeling more alive. Now, here's the key. Everybody's different. We're all wired different. We have different personality traits, different things. It's not the same for everybody. I like to read on my day off. I'm a reader. I've always been a reader, and so I like to read on my day off, not church stuff. Okay? No, I read history. I read literature, I read nonfiction, different kinds of things, because learning makes me feel alive. So when I learn some random thing, I'm like, I feel great. Now, for some of you, that's a drag. You read and you're like, it's just, everybody's different. My mother loves to work in the garden. When she has her hands in the dirt, she feels closer to God. It gives her energy. See? When I have my hands in the dirt, I feel like I'm digging to hell. You know, maybe I've just dug a shallow grave. I don't know. I don't like doing that. That takes energy away from me. So I don't do. I do yard work on another day than my Sabbath. Actually, I have my son do the yard work now on another day. That's even better. He's a slave. That's not true. Who's going to mow the yard next fall? He's like, I don't know. Sucks to be you. Yeah. All right. Anyway, but again, everybody's different. Don't just lay around. Explore. Find something that brings you joy. Deanna and I recently taken up kayaking on Lady Bird Lake, and we love it. It's just a joy, and explore little nooks and crannies of the urban, you know, jungle. Whatever it is for you, okay? But be curious. The next one is cozy. Cozy means that while we are being curious about any number of subjects, we're doing it in our pajamas or in a hammock or on a leisurely stroll through the woods or the park. There's got to be an element of chill to this. If you're exhausted coming out of your Sabbath, you might not be doing it right. All right? So look in that. But again, listen, one person's cozy is another person's crazy. And so there's no one right way to do it. Some people are just born at different speeds than others. Some are more aggressive people, some are more passive people. That's okay. Just find what makes you say, all right? Find that thing. So finally then, Sabbath day is a day for care. And care means to tend to something with diligence and delight. To care for a plant is to make sure it has good soil and good food and good sunlight. To care means I regularly check the leaves and make sure there's no brown spots on it. Right? So maybe check in on your own physical body. Maybe you take care of yourself physically. You work out. I work out on my Sabbath, right? Get some rest. Sleep in. Get the kids off to school, go back to bed. That's fine. You know, Deanna and I go, we work out here on the church parking lot at 6 a.m. Tuesdays and Thursdays. And on Thursday, we go home, go back to bed. We're like, I'm sleeping in. That's fine. But take care of yourself physically, okay? Take care of yourself relationally. This is not Hermit in the Cave Day, although solitude can absolutely be a part of it. But kind of where I tell, Deanna and I use as a date day. We enjoy each other's company. You know, maybe have friends over for dinner. But for some people, that might take away energy. For others of us, that's refreshing. It's a relational day. But then be sure not to neglect spiritual care. That's a vital part. I said I don't read church stuff on my day off, but I still read devotional things. I'll still read the Bible. I'll still read, pray. Why? Because I hope reading the Bible is not just work. You know, I've got to take care of my soul before I can take care of yours. And so your spiritual care is important. Now, most of you will probably use Sunday as your Sabbath. That still works best in our culture for many, many people. It wasn't too long ago that we had blue laws in which the state actually forced you to do this. Does anybody remember when stores had to be closed on Sunday and you couldn't do all these things? So coming to church is a great way to start things off. Even volunteering, it's not really work if you don't do it full time. It's not what nobody's defined as the person that makes the coffee or that greets at the door. But gathering in religious community is traditionally always been a part of the Sabbath practice of the people of God. So body, spirit, mind, emotions, what do you need to do to take care of yourself? Life is a marathon, not a sprint. So take care of yourself, and you'll go further faster. And in that spirit, speaking of that, I want to close with a great illustration that I heard several years ago. In one of my seminary classes, my professor once served as the pastor of First Presbyterian Church of Victoria, Texas. And it was one of the earliest Presbyterian churches in Texas. It was founded in 1838. And so he was there. He was pastoring on that church's 150th anniversary. So he happened to be going through some archives when he came across this story. It seems that one of the founding members of the church, and this was pre-Civil War, remember, she wrote about her family's journey west. She was a little girl at the time, and her family hitched up their wagons and followed the hordes of other pioneers from back east as they headed out to the new frontiers. This was part of the land rush to Texas. And her father, being a devout Christian, would always pull over and stop their caravan on Sundays, and they would take that day to worship and to rest. And his daughter was so upset because she could see scores of other wagons just passing them by. And she would say to her father, "This is so foolish. We're falling behind. Everybody's going to get there ahead of us. All the good land's going to be taken." And she was very anxious. But her father just said, "Sweetheart, we're going to honor God's principles. We're going to remember the Sabbath day and keep it holy." And then a funny thing happens. She writes that as the months went on, they began to pass by many of the wagons that had previously zipped on ahead of them. You see, when they were taking time to rest as God commanded them, guess who else was resting? Right? Their horses, their mules. Remember all that emphasis on commands for your animals too? And they passed by broken wagons and lame horses until, as it turns out, they were one of the first to arrive in Texas. And they settled on the best land in Victoria, and they gave part of it to start the church there. Now, I close with that story because we all of us can get tempted to say, "Yes, this Sabbath idea sounds great. It's very spiritual, I'm sure, but it's not practical. Anthony, there's just no way I could do that.
I'm sure that's great for you as a pastor and all, but you don't understand my industry. It would never work for me. Okay. But my job is to remind you of what God says. And God says we are not made to run without rest. Body, mind, soul, and spirit. Maybe you can't afford not to remember the Sabbath day and keep it holy. When it boils down to it, listen, it's always going to be a step of faith. Nobody stumbles into a discipline. You've never once in your life woken up and go, dude, I'm ripped. How did this happen? I have so much excess money in my account. This budget is amazing. That's not how it works with disciplines. It's always a step of faith. It's always, I'm going to decide to do this. I'm going to work at it. Listen, even for pastors, in fact, in my experience, pastors tend to violate this as much as anybody. I like to point out it's the one commandment that pastors will brag about breaking. I've taught this in I'm a presbyter. I'm over some pastors in the area, and I've taught this concept, and they go, I've had pastors say to me, oh, yeah, must be nice for you. I guess you got some staff. I can't afford to take time. It's like, would you brag about committing adultery or coveting your neighbor's donkey? You wouldn't break the other Ten Commandments, but we brag about this one. Even pastors have to make the choice to obey God's principles. And so I want to close out by making an announcement about my own step of faith and a part of this for us. We have at Southwest Family, we have a sabbatical policy for our ministers. And so that would include Pastor Connor and myself. And part of our package is that every 5 years, after 5 years, you get a month sabbatical. 10 years, you get 2 months. 15 years, you get 3 months. And then it starts back over at a month. And so 2018, some of you were here and remember, I took off for 3 months. That was my 15th year and went over to Scotland and wrote my dissertation. Well, that's been 5 years ago. Believe it or not, it's been 5 years. So now it rotates back to a month. In 2025, Pastor Connor will have his month sabbatical in addition to vacation time, and he'll be eligible for that. But right now, it's my turn. So what is it? What does it mean? Well, we are going to be, I mentioned this a little bit last week, our family has been provided with a free place to stay in Sicily. And so with the kids, you know, already graduating, Annick's about to be a senior, and we're like, hey, this is also maybe our last time all together as a family that we can do something like this. And so we've got the place, and let's go do that. So we're going to go in just a couple of weeks here. Deanna and I will be flying to Scotland first with her dad. Her mom passed away last fall, and it's always been his dream. He's a McCullough, and they're from Scotland, and they've got castles and all the... my ancestors in Sicily were the serfs that worked for the guys that had the castles. But the McCulloughs had castles, and they were falconers to King James IV and all these things. And so we can go, and he's always been his bucket list to travel. So we're going to take him for about 10 days, and we're going to follow the McCullough line through there. And then we're going to go over to Northern Ireland because they were some of the first Protestants that went over into that area. Remember Belfast? We talked about the movie last year. I've never been, so we're going to go there, show him that. And then we're going to put him on a plane back to Tennessee and let him find his own way to Texas, because that's what the McCulloughs did in the 18th. No, we're not going to do that. We'll send him back to Austin, and Deanna and I will fly on to Rome, where we will meet the rest of our family. We are assembling in Rome like we're the Avengers. We're coming. Ari is going to be in Iceland with my sister. She doesn't have kids, so she rents ours from time to time. And so this is his graduation trip. They want to go to Iceland, where the sun never sets, so yay. So he'll be flying into Rome. Annika, who just got back, yay! Annika is back home from Glasgow. My daughter was studying overseas all semester. She was singing here today, and so she'll get to be home for like 2 whole weeks. And then she'll fly by herself, which is old hat for now, and she'll fly to Rome from Austin, and we'll fly for that. So we'll all assemble in Rome, and then we're going to go down to Sicily, and we're going to hang out till the end of July. So we're going to be there, and so that's what it is. So what is the plan for that? Well, the plan is that Pastor Connor will have the reins of the church, and he has
He's going to do a great job. We've been working, he and the elders, and he's put together this strategy. I mean, his kids, he's thought of things I hadn't even thought of, and I've done this before. And so he's got this great plan, and everything is in place, and so he will be leading that and doing a great job. But we're going to need some of you guys. Part of the plan is you maybe stepping up a little bit. We already have a great volunteer culture in this church, but we're going to need to step that up a little bit and have you be a part of the plan so that we can take our sabbatical and be gone for this almost these 2 months. So what can you do? I would say there's three things, okay, three things that you can do. And one of them is, it's just two things. The other part has more. One of them is to pray for us, okay? And I really mean this. Pray for us. Going back to the loss of Deanna's mom in the fall and through her injury that she's just had in getting over, the loss of our nephew a couple weeks ago, and quite honestly, a number of things that I've been dealing with, some that you know, some that you don't, I am as tired emotionally, physically, spiritually, mentally, as I have probably been in 20 years. And so we really need this. This was a good idea, and we were like, hey, it's on the schedule, you know. But it has become a necessary idea. I desperately need. I'm just be honest, I'm getting close to burnout. I can feel that. A lot of pastors are. I know some of it has to do with the pandemic and coming out of that and those challenges. And so anyway, I think God had the foresight to know all that. And so pray for us. Pray that we will all get along. We have this joke in our family because we'll be driving. Driving in Sicily is insane, first of all. If you're driving in town, you're going to die because there's just people whipping it out. And then you leave town and you go into the mountains and it's just like there's no edge and you're on these windy backs. And little secret about my kids, they struggle with car sickness, and they always have. When they were little babies, I would clean up vomit from the back of the car. And so we're going to be in these dynamics in this little Fiat. It's a stick shift, so only I can drive it. And so here's what we say every day before we leave. We're going to go to the cathedral. Our apartment is just right off the town square. So we're going to go into the cathedral before we leave, and we're going to go down to the kneel at the altar, and we're going to pray to Mary, and we're going to pray for three things. We're going to pray that Dad won't get mad, Mom won't get nervous, and the kids won't throw up. That's going to be our deal. So anyway, so pray for us. And then, though, here's some a little more tangible things, is that to help carry the load here. Help carry the load here, and you could do that in three ways. We have three very specific needs, and one is this. If some of you would sign up for the Helping Hands team, some of you already have. We introduced this earlier in the year, and it is a group. It's like a mailing list where if you got some skills, I have a set of skills, and there's whatever those skills are. Some of it's yard work. Some of you are handy people, and you could do things. Some of you could sew, or you could cater, or you whatever. But if there's something that pops up that we need some help with, we can send out this email and go, hey, we've got, you know, the steps broke. We couldn't get in the door for a while. Somebody came out and did an amazing job and just fixed. And he was out in a day, and it was just done. And so this is really working, but we need to increase that. So we need more people on the Helping Hands list. Not that you have to do everything. If we have 100 people on the list instead of 10, you will actually do much less because it's many hands. So that's the one thing. Another very specific area is Drew and Alexi, would you guys wave at us from back there from the sound booth? We really need help in the sound booth, especially on Pro Presenter. What is Pro Presenter? Alexi pushes a button and magic things happen. The walls change. They do all these things. That's Pro Presenter. Now, I create the stuff, but somebody's got to run it. And so, you know, one person that runs it is Ari, and he's not going to be here, and others, and we got people moving, and we got things. And then Pastor Connor does it sometimes. He's going to be up here preaching. And so we need help. So we need people that can get trained, not just for this summer, but we really need to bolster this team. And so if we get enough people to do it, you could do it once or twice a month for a service, and that would be all we would need. Right now, we don't have enough people to have that kind of a spread, so it's a little bit heavier on them. But it's a fun job. I mean, you're sitting here anyway. You might as well be making stuff happen. So we need help with that. Both those things, if you're interested, you can sign up either on the app. There's a place, or old-fashioned piece of paper out on the table that says Helping Hand says ProPresenter. You can sign up. We'll get you trained on the ProPresenter, figure out a time that works for you, and just kind of make that happen. All right, those are two things. Last thing is this, and this is one that all of you can do. In fact, probably, not probably, all of you are doing it right now. Okay, look back behind you. Everybody just look back. What's beneath you? A chair. You are engaged in the ministry of butts in seats. That's a legitimate ministry. That is a ministry that I love. Because butts in seats means there's people that are here to speak to and engage to, and it just feels better to have a crowd than a few. This is one of the burdens on pastors since the pandemic, because everybody is down. We're not to the numbers we were before. We're trying to figure out how that works and what that looks like. But I will tell you, okay, I woke up this morning, looked at the clock, it was 1:48 a.m., and I woke up from a nightmare. I said, one of these dreams. You know what it was? I was preaching, and there were three people there to preach. That's a pastor's anxiety dream, all right? And so, if you say, oh, you know, Anthony's not going to be here, I don't think I'll go. You know? First of all, how rude to Pastor Connor. He's getting up here. He's, you know, nobody let me run a church when I was 26 years old. You know, we have trust in him, and he's great. And he's going to grow. And a buddy, a pastor of mine, said, how seasoned is your associate? I go, not as seasoned as he's going to be. He's going to be after this, man. He's going to be dynamite after this. But you need to come and support him. Be here. See? Be here, and this is your church. This is our church. It's not, oh, this Anthony. No. But here's the other thing. If you don't come, if this church collapses while I'm gone, you know what you're telling me? You can't ever leave. And if I can't ever leave, you know what that means? I'm a slave. I got to be chained to this place. And that ain't what you want. It's not what any of us want, okay? So, ministry of butts. I'm not saying don't take a vacation. I get it. Summer's always lull anyway. I'm just saying, if you wake up one morning and you're like, do I want to go to church or not? Anthony's not here. All right? Okay. So, when do I leave? You know, we leave June 7th, which means we're here next week. Next week is Ask the Pastor, and then we'll be baptizing, and then I will see you cats in August. And it's going to be great, and you're going to do great, and we'll get back, and I'll show you some fun pictures, unless Mount Etna blows up and kills us all. That's kind of my, like, if you got to go out, all the family standing around an active volcano, that'd be kind of cool. But anyway, I need a break, right? All right. But other than that, you're going to be in good hands. Let's pray for you. Father God, I know this ended on me. It wasn't supposed to be about me. This is about these folks in this room. This is about us, our relationship with you. This is about how you created us. And Father, there's some people in here that desperately, desperately need rest. And I don't know if they can take a sabbatical or not, but there's some people in this room. They got enough vacation time banked. They're going to retire a year early and get paid. That's not healthy. Somebody needs to go to their boss and go, guess what? I'm taking some of that vacation time. I'm taking some time off. I'm not going to be defined by what I do, but by who God intends me to be. And God, the funny thing is, when we do that, we're actually better at the thing that we do. Because it becomes a joy again and not a strain. And so, Father, I pray that you would do. There's one Holy Spirit in this room, and it's not me. I can't tell people what to do, how that looks in their life, but I pray that they would get with you and they would be inspired to take a look at their life in the area of their time and say, Father, search my heart. How is my time of rest? How am I fulfilling your Sabbath principle? What do I need to do to make my life more in line with what you created for me to be? And then, God, I'm committed to learn that and to grow in that and to be disciplined in that. And I will trust you to provide for my productivity, to provide for my advancement as a free man, not as a slave, as a child of the King. We ask this in Jesus' name. His name is